Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, cultural enrichment, and all-inclusive fares. Discover more at Viking.com.
Texas says private businesses cannot force their workers to get vaccinated against COVID-19. Plus, the IMF ends weeks of speculation and keeps its embattled chief in power. And the Department of Justice ramps up its antitrust enforcement.
And they've basically gone to staff and said, if you have some cases that you think are righteous cases, bring them to us. We'll give you the green light.
It's Tuesday, October 12th. I'm Peter Granitz with the Wall Street Journal. Here's the AM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories moving your world today. Texas Governor Greg Abbott has banned COVID-19 vaccine mandates for employees in the state. The executive order prohibits companies from requiring their workers to be vaccinated against the virus. It makes no exemptions for healthcare facilities and hospitals, many of which require their employees to be vaccinated. Elected officials in Texas have already blocked vaccine requirements in government settings, and until now, they had let private companies make their own decisions. The International Monetary Fund has said it has full confidence in its managing director, Kristalina Georgieva. That puts an end to weeks of uncertainty while its board investigated her role in a scandal at the World Bank, where she was chief executive. The investigation centered on whether Georgieva tried to boost China's standing in a high-profile World Bank report. Two board members of Chinese developer Fantasia have resigned days after the company rattled investors by failing to repay $206 million in maturing dollar bonds. According to Fantasia, the chair of the audit committee, Ho Man, had expressed concern that he was not kept fully informed of certain crucial company matters in a timely manner. Fantasia has said it's working with the support of local governments and others to resolve its problems. And California is opening an investigation into the oil spill off its southern coast. Attorney General Rob Bonta says his office will decide whether to pursue civil or criminal action.
Our investigation will determine the facts and who is ultimately responsible. If our laws were violated, we will hold those responsible accountable.
Coastal Access has resumed in Huntington Beach after 2 weeks of cleanup. JP Morgan's wealth management clients can buy cryptocurrencies, but it doesn't sound like CEO Jamie Dimon thinks it's a particularly good idea. Dimon yesterday called Bitcoin worthless, a sentiment he shared before. So what's the disconnect? We have Caitlin Ostroff with us again. She reports on the crypto markets. Hi, Caitlin.
Hey, Peter.
Bitcoin is selling for more than $50,000, so I gotta ask, is Dimon wrong? Is it worthless?
I mean, there's kind of always been this debate as to what the true price of Bitcoin should be, but at least for the moment, people are clearly valuing it higher, in part because there's been a bunch of speculation that next week we're going to have the first Bitcoin futures ETF approved, which might give institutions and pensions the first chance to really, you know, get exposure to Bitcoin ever in the US. And so that's been really pushing the price past 50,000, people think that, you know, all of a sudden more people are going to be able to get exposure. And so whether it will be worthless in 10 years' time is hard to say, but at least for the moment, the market doesn't think so.
What's it mean when a bank will give its clients access to something that its CEO says is worthless?
As Dimon said, this is something the clients want. And when you speak to institutional investors, traditional investors like asset managers and hedge funds, the desire for them to hold Bitcoin is their own. And the banks and all of the other, you know, traditional Wall Street organizations really have had to bend to the will of their clients because otherwise they risk them going elsewhere. Regardless of what Jamie Dimon thinks, the clients do want this. This is something they want to have exposure to, even just in a small amount on their balance sheets for their portfolios. And so, you know, him warning that it's worthless, maybe it is, but I guess for the moment, that doesn't really matter.
More regulators are treating digital currencies seriously. Do you think skeptics may be comforted by the official scrutiny, or maybe they'll be validated?
So the fact that it's getting more official scrutiny could actually mean that we get some uniformity there. And it lets people who both want to buy and sell these assets know what type of information they should be collecting, what their requirements are, in a way that potentially could make the crypto market even more of a long-term market. People are looking at this as a new asset class and one that potentially is here to stay, especially if we get regulation.
Caitlin Ostroff is a markets reporter in London. Thanks for your time.
Thanks.
Coming up, the Justice Department has big business in its sight, a look at antitrust enforcement in the Biden era.
You're a growing business and you can't afford to slow down. If anything, you could probably use a few more hours in the day. That's why the most successful growing businesses are working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Start a call instantly in huddles and ditch cumbersome calendar invites. Or build an automation with Workflow Builder to take routine tasks off your plate. No coding required. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
The Justice Department still doesn't have its Senate-confirmed antitrust chief, but that has not stopped the DOJ from investigating big business. It is digging into Google parent company Alphabet and Visa and Apple, and it's sued to block the partnership between JetBlue and American Airlines, which begs the question, is the Department of Justice under President Biden ramping up its oversight of corporate America? We have Brent Kendall with us. He covers, among other things, the Justice Department. Hi, Brent.
Hey, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. What do these early actions from the antitrust department tell us about how it's operating under President Biden?
I mean, what they really tell us is that the administration is serious about cracking down on mergers that it views as anti-competitive and business conduct, particularly by really powerful firms that could be viewed as sort of bullying or muscling out other competition. And even though we don't have a political appointee to run the antitrust division, we do have political appointees who run the Justice Department, and they are basically overseeing a career staff, you know, that's there between administrations and generally favors bringing cases anyway with just some encouragement. And they've basically gone to staff and said, look, you know, if you have some cases that you think are you know, righteous cases, bring them to us. We'll give you the green light and then let's go do these things. And so that's what we've seen so far.
Who has the president tapped to lead the division?
So the antitrust division, in theory, in the next few months will be led by a man named Jonathan Cantor, who's a longtime antitrust lawyer. He only just recently got his Senate hearing. It took the administration, we're in an unusual set of circumstances. I mean, the administration has made antitrust enforcement a big issue and yet made choosing a chief for DOJ one of their really late picks for appointments. So that, you know, it's been a very long transition. Mr. Cantor will sail through the Senate confirmation process. It's just a matter of when the Senate gets to him and confirms him. And so, you know, once he's installed, he'll get to pick some other political types to help him out. And we can expect, I think, you know, even more cases than we've seen so far.
Looking at the ongoing investigations into Apple, into Alphabet, into Visa, is there any common theme?
I mean, the common theme is basically attempted monopolization, right? I mean, it's not unlawful to have a monopoly. If you were just really good at what you do and you make products or offer services that people just like better than everybody else's and you dominate the marketplace, that's fine. But it's against the law to what they call maintain a monopoly in any competitive way. So if you use the power that you gain to then keep other people from challenging you in the future through a variety of tactics and practices, that can be unlawful. And so the government in these investigations hasn't yet concluded that it thinks these companies have engaged unlawfully, but I mean, they're deep into investigations to consider whether to bring cases arguing that. And as we say in the story, I mean, Google already is facing one case from the DOJ in which the government, along with a bunch of states, argues that, you know, a variety of Google tactics have helped it unlawfully maintain its, you know, search engine monopoly and prevented anybody else from really entering the marketplace.
Google is among the big tech firms that have pretty much fallen out of favor in Washington. Do you see big enforcement effort on the part of the antitrust division, especially on these tech firms?
Yes. Whether that's because they've fallen out of favor in Washington or because they've just continued to grow bigger and bigger and bigger, I mean, that's open for interpretation. But I mean, you know, there is some bipartisan recognition or belief that, you know, these, for a handful of these tech firms, they've just gotten so big and so powerful, and the way they operate is potentially problematic, that the government, you know, has an interest in pursuing them. So we do have the one Google case already, and then the FTC has brought a case against Facebook, and, you know, we could see further cases.
You mentioned the FTC, and much of the attention has been paid to the Federal Trade Commission and its relatively new commissioner, Lina Khan. But despite all the fanfare, there's been little enforcement on her watch. Is that right?
That's right. I mean, you know, look, Ms. Khan is 32 years old. She's sort of the face of this progressive movement. Even when President Biden first nominated her, he didn't say he was going to install her to chair the commission. And then after she was confirmed, he immediately moved to do that. And so, I mean, there's just a lot of buzz surrounding the FTC right now. But, you know, we have a somewhat unusual situation in the U.S. that's different than how other countries do their antitrust enforcement, in that we have two agencies with similar powers who both do the same stuff. But, I mean, you know, they have different formats. And so the DOJ, it's easier for them in some ways to do things because it's just kind of a unitary format. Whereas the FTC, you have five commissioners. And so you're going to have three people be able to agree on anything to do anything.
One imagines there's a bit of unease in Washington among the trade associations and the business groups about these two coming into the antitrust world. What are those groups saying?
Certainly, you know, large companies in the sights of the government are not going to be too thrilled right now. Companies that are thinking about wanting to do big transformative mergers are going to have a tougher time. But there are plenty of marketplace participants who actually want more antitrust enforcement. If you are a smaller tech company and feel like Google or Facebook has made life difficult for you to, you know, make inroads, you'd be excited about anything that that the government wants to do to rein them in. I mean, we also see this a lot in agriculture. I mean, you know, farmers complain, you know, vigorously about how consolidated the marketplace is and how the big boys sort of stifle open markets and their opportunities to sell their products and to diversify and things of that nature. So, you know, smaller farmers, smaller businesses, anybody who's a relatively smaller player in the business world likes this antitrust enforcement push.
Brent Kendall covers the DOJ for the Journal. Thanks for your time.
Hey, thank you.
And finally, credit reports can dictate how much money you can borrow and spend. And in some unfortunate cases, they can leave you paying more than you should for loans. Cheryl Winokur-Monk writes in the Journal about how errors on credit reports can have long-term effects.
The errors really run the gamut. Sometimes they can be very small errors that really don't make a difference. And sometimes people's credit profiles even get mixed up, which are much bigger errors. Like you have a similar name or a similar social security number, and then, you know, you're mixed up with somebody else, and that can be a real, real headache to fix.
You can hear more of her story about credit repair in a recent episode of the Journal's Your Money Briefing podcast. And that's what's news for Tuesday morning. We'll be back tonight with a new show. I'm Peter Granitz for the Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.
What do the most successful growing businesses have in common? They're working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.